This morning we're looking at Thomas, Doubting Thomas, as he's become known proverbially. I hope we shall see that that's something of a misnomer. Because although he had very grave doubts at the start of the story, he ended up with a greater statement of faith than any that had been made about Jesus up to that time, and in fact for some time afterwards. We don't know a great deal about Thomas, but what we do know comes almost exclusively from St. John's Gospel. There are legends and apocryphal acts of Thomas, which we know were written a lot later, and like most of the apocryphal books of Acts, they contain possibly some odd bits of truth, but most of it is a collection of fanciful stories. So, as always, we concentrate on the biblical account, and it's to those we would turn now. So if you'd like to turn the Bibles to page 110 of the New Testament section, you'll find St. John's Gospel, chapter 20, the part we had read for our second reading today. What do we learn from St. John's Gospel? We should be looking slightly wider than just this one passage, but mainly in this passage. What do we learn about Thomas? Firstly, I think we can learn that he was a man of courage. When we first meet Thomas in anything more than a list of the disciples, we see a man of courage. Do you remember the story when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead? Jesus delayed for a while at the place where he was before going to the home of Lazarus and his sisters. And then when he announces his intention of going back into Judea to the home of Lazarus, they say, "Why are you going to do that? Surely, if you go back into Judea, the Jews are waiting to kill you. That's not a very sensible thing to do." But Thomas is the one, under those circumstances, chapter 11, verse 16, who says to the others, "Let us go with him, that we might die with him." And maybe there's a hint of resignation there in his courage, but nonetheless, that's a courageous thing to say. He may have said it with very little enthusiasm, but if nothing else, he was loyal to Jesus and wanted to be with him, even though he thought that what Jesus was doing was foolhardy. I think there's another aspect to Thomas's courage as well, and I think that is the way that it shows up in his ability to voice the doubts which he had. He wasn't afraid to say that he had problems accepting what others had told him about the resurrection. I guess he was a solid sort of character with perhaps not much imagination. But he was courageous because he voiced the doubts which he had. He voiced his scepticism about what he'd been told. And he does that in the context of, what, I suppose, 10 other people who had seen the Lord together. And I think that takes a lot of courage. And I think it takes courage today to make the same sort of confession. Perhaps those of you who've not been Christians long, or maybe those of you who are still struggling towards some sort of faith, I think you'll know what I mean when I say it's very inhibiting to be in a group of Christians and then to have to say what your very real doubts, your uncertainties about the Christian faith are. It's very inhibiting to be in the midst of Christians who seem to have the whole thing sewn up. They're completely sure of their faith, they know all the answers, or they appear to anyway, and perhaps quite unwittingly, they make you feel very small, and they make you feel that if you voice your doubts, you'll be somehow pushed away. And it takes courage to say, "Actually, I doubt. Actually, I have great problems with the resurrection." So Thomas, then, is a man of courage, because he comes straight out with his difficulty. And maybe it's a lesson for us as Christians to be aware of those in our midst who have the doubts, and if we have doubts ourselves, to be courageous and to share them, because as we shall see, it's in sharing those doubts that Thomas was able to have them resolved. I think it's immensely liberating to be able to say honestly that you can't understand something in the Christian faith, that you find it difficult to see how the resurrection took place. It's difficult to understand how God can allow suffering in a world like this and so on. But once you pluck up the courage and once you share those doubts, then there's a whole possibility of them being resolved. Otherwise, what happens? Otherwise, you just play the part. You go along with the Christian crowd, feeling guilty that somehow they've got something you haven't, going along feeling that you're being dishonest, and yet somehow you can't bring yourself to voice those doubts and uncertainties. If this rings bells for you, then take courage. Take courage from Thomas, and take courage to share those doubts and those fears, because it says he shared them that they were resolved. So firstly, he was a man of courage. Then secondly, he was a man of loyalty. We've already glimpsed a little bit of that. Thomas says he's prepared to stick by Jesus, even if it means going to his death with him. And no doubt at that point he meant it, although we all know, of course, that all the disciples fled at the time of Jesus' arrest. But here, after the death of Jesus, he's still one of the 12. He's still there. In fact, John goes out of his way to say that it was fairly unusual that he wasn't with the 12 on that first evening. And it seems to me that he was loyal to Jesus despite his doubts. He undoubtedly still thought of Jesus as a great teacher, a great leader, and he was still loyal to him, but he needed proof. He needed proof of the fact that the person that he'd seen die on the cross was in fact alive. He would have no doubt loved to have believed it. He would have no doubt the desire to believe what he was told, that Jesus was alive, burned within him, and yet he couldn't. He just couldn't bring himself to accept it on the other's say-so. And I believe that the one reason why Jesus revealed himself to him in that dramatic way was that desire, that wanting to know that it was true. Because Thomas was basically loyal, but he was also a skeptic. I guess, too, he was probably rather literally minded. He'd witnessed the resurrection of Lazarus from the dead, which, in fact, was not the same as the resurrection of Jesus. It was more like a resuscitation, as, of course, Lazarus died again one day, and so on. And no doubt stories of locked doors and Jesus coming in the midst without the door being opened and so on just seemed to him to be too much. After all, Lazarus was raised from the dead and Lazarus couldn't do that. And he hadn't grasped the fact that Jesus had been raised to a new dimension, that the resurrection body was a changed body, that it was a spiritual body fit for life in a spiritual realm. So Thomas, literally minded? Yes. Skeptical? Yes. But let's not be too hard on him. He was loyal to Jesus through it all, in a way which I guess many of us would do well to emulate. A man of courage, a man of loyalty, thirdly, a man of honesty. And again, we've hinted at this. He was honest in his doubts, and we'll look again at that in a moment. But firstly, can you cast your mind back to the first reading we had in the 14th chapter of John's Gospel? It's about 6 pages back in the Bible, if you want to turn to it. 6 or 7 pages back, John chapter 14. And look particularly at verses 3, 4, and 5. Jesus says to his disciples, "And when I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am you may be also, and you know the way where I am going." And Thomas says with blunt honesty, "No, we don't." What would you have said? My guess is that what I would have done would to have kept quiet, nodded wisely, and played along, hoping that what Jesus said in subsequent things would make it clear to me. I don't think I would have acknowledged that I hadn't a clue what Jesus was talking about, but Thomas does. He's too honest to play along in that way. In his commendable honesty, he says, "No, I don't understand. Lord, we do not know where you're going. How can we know the way?" And in reply, of course, Jesus delivers what must be one of the most famous verses in the Bible. And I think we should be eternally grateful for Thomas's honesty, because it produced this wonderful reply of Jesus, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me." I suspect that though Thomas's question to Jesus was honest, I suspect that it was in a sense earthbound. Here was literal-minded Thomas again. "Where are you going? You know, is it to Jerusalem? Is it back to Bethany? Where are we going?" It was earthbound. And because Thomas was earthbound in his thinking, he missed the spiritual truth over and over again. Until, that is, until after the resurrection, when he encountered Jesus for himself. And then it all became clear. But let's not despise him for being earthbound. Many, many folk are like Thomas. Many, many folk have that same earthbound character. And people like that, and maybe you are one, maybe I'm one, need to have things explained clearly to us. We need to have an encounter with Jesus to see things in another dimension, to see things spiritually. I think too often as a church we prevent people coming to faith because we expect them to have our spiritual understanding. We've forgotten what it's like as Christians to be earthbound, to not see things in a spiritual way. And because we've forgotten, we don't communicate with people who are still earthbound, still asking questions which maybe we've forgotten we ever asked. But Thomas is refreshing. He reminds us of the needs of ordinary people, ordinary honest folk, to have their ordinary honest questions answered. And as we shall see, that sort of answer, an ordinary honest answer to an ordinary honest question about spiritual things, must involve an encounter with Jesus himself, with the risen Jesus. Did you notice the way that Jesus deals with him in the passage that we were looking at first in chapter 20? Did you see the way that Jesus deals with him? He deals with him in an earthbound way. He meets him where he is. He comes to him and he says, "You want to put your fingers into my hands? You want to thrust your hand into my side? Carry on." Thomas needed that sort of blunt answer to his questions. Because however he may have wished it otherwise, he had doubts that he couldn't ignore. And he was too honest to pretend that they might go away. And notice the way Jesus deals with him. He doesn't blame him for wanting him to be sure. There's no attempt to blame Thomas or his doubts, but rather the desire to meet him, the desire to change him, the desire to turn his doubt into faith. But in Thomas's case, and it's the same, is absolutely the same is true today. In Thomas's case, as with anyone else, there has to be a desire to encounter Jesus and a willingness to be convinced. You see, Thomas doesn't say, "Nothing can convince me about the resurrection of Jesus. I will not believe." Rather, he says, "I want to believe, but I find myself doubting. I cannot find the faith that you other guys have. I need to encounter Jesus from myself. Second-hand experiences aren't enough. I need to experience him for myself." I believe that what Thomas found to be true can be equally true for anyone today. I believe as long as you're honest about your doubts and about your unbelief before God, and as long as you want it to change and you're willing to meet with Jesus, then he will meet your doubt and then he will bring you to faith. Now obviously, the resurrection appearances of Jesus has finished, and it won't be in the same way as it was for Thomas. But it will be a real encounter, nonetheless. And you'll be sure that you have met with Jesus, even as Thomas was sure he had met with Jesus. You'll be sure of the person rather than the fact. You'll be sure of your Lord and your God. But saying, "I'm willing to meet with Jesus and to be proved that my doubts are wrong," takes an honesty and a courage which I think many people lack. Not so Thomas. We've seen already how that worked out in his life. So that brings us to the fourth thing about Thomas. He was a man of courage, a man of honesty, a man of loyalty. Fourthly, he was a man of faith, because that's what he became. And what a faith! His declaration when Jesus stands before him is, "My Lord and my God." And that declaration far exceeds anything that any of the other disciples had said up to that point. "My Lord and my God." Do you think Thomas reached out his fingers and put them into Jesus' hands and put his hand into his side? I don't think so. The encounter with Jesus was enough. "My Lord and my God." You might well be thinking by now, it's all very well for Thomas. I think I'd believe if Jesus appeared to me and stood in front of me and said, "Put out your finger and feel the holes in my hands," and so on. I confess that I've often thought that as well about Thomas. It was all right for him. But I've only just realised, as I prepared this sermon, just how much a step of faith it was for Thomas. Because he doesn't say, "Ah, yes, now I believe you're alive from the dead." He says, "My Lord and my God." And he's no reason for saying that at all. Because to see a risen Jesus standing in front of you, no way proves that Jesus is God. It just proves that God has raised Jesus from the dead. And yet this is the step of faith that Thomas takes. He says, "My Lord and my God." Jesus, after all, might have been raised like Lazarus. By God. There was no proof that he was God. And yet, because his doubts about the resurrection were put to flight, he's able to take a bigger step of faith and to declare Jesus his God. That's why Thomas is a man of faith. He didn't have it handed to him on a plate, at least not in the way to declare that he was God. And it's the climax of John's Gospel. The declaration that Jesus is God. It's where we started in the first part of the first chapter, the first verse of John's Gospel. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And now here at the end of the Gospel we have the climax, "My Lord and my God," from Thomas. The story comes full circle. John has set out to show that Jesus is God. And the climax of the story is Thomas's declaration of that truth. I think we ought to rename Doubting Thomas Believing Thomas, because after all, that's the important point of the story. He was a man of faith. The legends about St. Thomas are many and interesting and varied and probably untrue, but there's a story that he, and this one may have a bit of truth in it, that he founded a church in South India. There's an ancient church there which claims that it was founded by him, and that's possible. It's certainly true that when missionaries from the West first got to India, they found this thriving ancient church. But whatever the truth of that is, may be, the important thing is that from that first Sunday after Easter onwards, Thomas went forward as a man of faith to do great things for his Lord and his God. In conclusion, I want to say something slightly different about signs and about asking for them. In view of Thomas's demand that he should have a sign before he believed, how does that leave us? You see, from one point of view, there doesn't seem to be much difference between Thomas saying, "Unless I see in his hands the prints of the nails, etc., I will not believe," and the Pharisees, who in Matthew's Gospel come to Jesus and saying, "We want to see a sign from you." And of course, you remember what Jesus said to them. "An evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign, but no sign shall be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was in 3 days and three nights in the belly of the whale, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." In other words, Jesus is saying, only his death and resurrection, the 3 days and the three nights, are essential signs for faith. That should all be all that's needed for us to accept Jesus as our Lord and our God. So perhaps you're saying, well, there isn't much difference between the two things. What's the difference? Why is it that Jesus honoured what Thomas did and yet condemns the Pharisees seeking for a sign? I want to suggest to you from another point of view that there's a very big difference between those two approaches. And the difference lies in this. It's the difference between the desire for an encounter with Jesus for his own sake, without any bother about what wonder-working or miracle goes on and so on, and on the other hand, a desire to see a sign for its own sake, which is, after all, what the Pharisees were asking for. Let me put it in modern terms so that you can grasp the point that I'm trying to make. It's the difference between someone who says, I can't fully believe in Christ. Something's holding me back. But I long to have the faith of these Christians. I long to meet with Christ, but I have these terrible doubts. It's the difference between that and, on the other hand, the person who says, I'll believe in God if my aged mother is cured of arthritis. In one case, it's desiring to know Christ for his own sake. On the other, it's trying to manipulate or test out God or to mould God into our own desires and our own priorities. And from my reading, at any rate, it seems to me that Thomas wanted to encounter Christ and to meet with him. And that surely should be our priority. It doesn't matter what sign God may or may not give us. What matters is whether we encounter the living Jesus for ourselves or not. Signs are as much a gift from God as our salvation. But one thing the Thomas story convinces me is that God will not give me a sign if I ask, but rather God will help me to meet with Jesus if I ask. That's the key point. If I desire in my heart to say my Lord and my God to him, then he will give me the opportunity to make that response. How about you? Can you say in your own heart, my Lord and my God to Jesus Christ? What's your response to the resurrection? Do you still have those doubts? And if you still have the doubts, are you honest enough to speak them out? Are you honest enough to share them? Are you honest enough to say that you want God to change you into someone who believes? Or are you like the Pharisees, just interested in Jesus, but not willing to change? What's your response to the resurrection? Because Jesus longs to meet with each person as he met with Thomas. He longs to increase your faith. He longs to challenge you to service. He longs that you would walk with him day by day. But he's not going to force himself on you. He comes in response to a heartfelt desire to know him as Lord and to acknowledge him as God.